Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very accomplished and a tall leader from the corporate world from Bangalore, India, Mr. Ajay Nanavati. Ajay, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. As I mentioned to you when we were starting off, I'm not quite sure why I qualify to be on this, but I'm happy to contribute in whatever small way I can.
Thank you. You're being very modest. Ajay is the chairman of Quantum Advisors, and he's the former chairman of Syndicate Bank. So Ajay, before we talk about leadership and your avatar as a board member, tell me about your own amazing journey in brief.
So I grew up in Bombay. I did my chemical engineering in the US in the days when that was not very common. I don't have an MBA. I don't have any master's. I'm the least educated in my family. The bulk of my career has been spent with 3M. I started as employee number one in India. Wow. I built the company from scratch. And as I said, I've had a pretty boring life, 30 years with one company, 40 years with one lady, 50 years in one house. So you can't get much more boring than that.
Wonderful. 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 Well, I can certainly relate to the middle part, 41 years with the same lady. I can't say the same job and same house, but you've spent a lot of time in building 3M in India is quite iconic. I mean, I remember we used to be looking for those 3M notepads, and then we suddenly realized they're coming into India.
Right.
But let's talk leadership now.
Uh-huh.
What were some of the key experiences in your early career mm-hmm. that shaped your approach to leadership?
So, if I look back, I think the couple of things that stand out. One is that when I started in 3M in India, the first thing I learned was the power of a meritocracy. That, especially in the Indian context, where it was often about connections, contacts, that was one of my key early learnings, which I carried forward into my subsequent career, was to see firsthand how powerful a true meritocracy can be. The second big learning for me was the power of building a culture that encourages experimentation and has a high tolerance for failure, all essential ingredients for driving innovation. And 3M, as you know, was always ranked as one of the world's most innovative companies.
Yes.
So in summary, these were the two big ahas: the power of the meritocracy and building a culture that tolerates failure and encourages experimentation.
Very interesting. And what would you describe as your own leadership philosophy?
So that's an interesting question. I often get asked this question as to, what was your typical day, week, month, year in the company like? And, I always respond to that saying that, in my 30 odd years with 3M, I had a pretty uniform style. I spent roughly 30% of my time on people development, on developing talent. I spent about 30% of my time being an ambassador for the company, calling on customers, participating in external industry forums, et cetera, et cetera. And I spent about 30% of my time on day-to-day operations and about 10% of my time on personal development. Now, I was blessed and fortunate that I had an organization leadership, I think some of whom you mentioned, which allowed me the luxury of following this model. And as the old saying goes, the proof of the pudding lies in the eating.
Correct.
And one of the things when I talk about this leadership pipeline, one of the things that gives me the most pride is that 3M, the number of CXOs a small company like 3M India has produced. You know, we are a 1,500 employee company and our 4,000 revenue crores revenue, but we've produced in excess of 30 CXOs in the Indian ecosystem. So, you know, that's kind of how I would describe as I've always said, the job of a leader is producing leaders.
Very interesting. And, you know, given the fact that you worked in different countries and different environments, how did you adapt your leadership style in different cultural and business environments like Singapore, the US, and Israel?
So another very interesting question. And again, as I said, a lot of my comments will be linked to my 3M life,
Correct.
Having spent 30 years with this company. So as I said earlier, I think one of the biggest things that we were so deeply inculcated in our DNA in 3M was this was an organization that was colorblind, gender blind, nationality blind, and purely meritocratic.
Right.
So as an example, here was an iconic Dow 30 US company from the Midwest, which had a Swede as the chairman and CEO, had a Korean as the head of international, had an Indian as the chief technology officer, had a Canadian as an HR head. So in the top 10 people in the company, five or six were non-Americans in an iconic American company. So right from the get-go, that cultural mindset was so deeply ingrained that it really didn't it was a no-brainer for me to adapt. So when I was in Singapore, I was responsible for Asia Pacific. My geography covered from Japan, Australia, New Zealand, China, all the way to India. So that was you know, I spent 20 days on a flight. I actually built a million miles on Northwest KLM. But so to me, there was a it was just sort of natural, because that was the environment we grew up in. However, obviously there were some subtle nuances that applied. You know, one that jumps out at me was in my 3.5 years in Israel. What was the big aha for me was Israel was a country where, you know, you had to earn respect and credibility. Just because I was the managing director, it counted for nothing. It might get me a cup of coffee, that's about it. So so you realize that in each, so in some countries there was a hierarchical culture. In countries like Israel, as I said, there was you know, you had to earn the right to be respected. You know, in India, dissent was not tolerated. In the US, dissent was encouraged. So these were some of the subtle nuances. So frankly speaking, it didn't even come up as an issue in my mind.
Amazing. Thank you. My next question is that, you know, having led teams in so many different areas, can you share an example of leading a team through a significant change or a challenge?
Wow. Now, this could be a standalone dialogue by
I
itself.
agree. Yes.
You know, when we started 3M India, within a year of forming the company, the Indian economic crisis hit. The currency devalued from, I don't know, 9 rupees to 15 rupees overnight. And the company was undercapitalized out of the gate. We were very import dependent at that time. Then when I moved to Singapore, that's when the Asian financial crisis hit. When I moved to Austin, Texas, 9/11 happened. I moved to Minnesota, the Iraq War happened.
Wow.
I came back, then I went to Israel when the Lebanon War happened. So, and then when I moved back to India, the Lehman crisis happened.
Jesus.
So my wife always told me that, does trouble follow you, or do you follow trouble? But having looked back on all these experiences, having lived through it with the sort of scars on my back, I think the three or four or five key learnings that emerged, which have helped me in good stead subsequently. So, for example, one of the things that I learned was speed is of the essence. Do not fall into this paralysis analysis in the face of a crisis.
Right.
Secondly, be ruthless about prioritization. All you can't put out all fires simultaneously. See, and very importantly, was don't sacrifice the future at the expense of the present. This too shall pass. The other one was, of course, communicate, communicate, and over communicate. And finally, learn to leverage your networks.
Mm.
You know, as the old saying goes, misery loves company.
Mm.
So that was the, those were the four or five learnings that emerged from all these crises that I lived through.
Fascinating. Thank you. What a great response. So one more question related to leadership, and then I'll move to your other avatar as a board member.
Mm-hmm.
When I was reading about you, Ajay, I was fascinated that you use the term that you're an innovation evangelist.
Mm-hmm.
How do you integrate, or how did you integrate innovation into your mm-hmm. leadership style?
Yeah. So, you know, nowadays the word innovation is so overused and so abused.
Right.
Every Tom, Dick, or Harry claims to be innovative. You know, I remember seeing a sign outside a florist shop which said innovative flower arrangements. You know, or a panwala will say innovative pans.
Mm.
You know, it has become such an overused and abused word that has kind of lost its. Similarly, in the startup ecosystem, which I'm involved in.
Mm.
So again, when I say innovation evangelist, it really boils down to putting your money where your mouth is. You know, it's very easy to talk the talk. It's very difficult to walk the talk. So one of the things I aspired to do when I was in leadership roles in 3M was to create an environment where people didn't feel penalized for making mistakes.
Right.
We created funding for ideas which 90% of which failed.
Mm.
In fact, believe it or not, I actually instituted an award for the best failed idea.
Mm.
So to create a comfort zone with experimentation, etc. Mm. On the other hand, having said that, we were a very metrics driven culture. So right. It wasn't just about shooting hoops and coming in shorts and having lattes in the office. Mm. You know, we had a very metrics driven culture. So for example, in the case of 3M, our key metric for measuring innovation was what we called New Product Vitality Index, NPVI. And 3M is known for this, that we had a goal, which all of us were measured by, and it was on my report card, and it will be, my bonus was based on that,
mm-hmm.
in achieving what we said, 30% of revenues coming from products introduced in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for a $32 billion company, to aspire to have revenues in any given year, 30% of revenues coming from products introduced in the last 5 years was no mean task.
Right.
So again, it really boiled down to walking the talk, setting clear, measurable metrics to drive innovation, and creating a culture that encouraged that.
Very well said. Thank you. So Ajay, I'm now going to talk to you about another subject, which is your avatar as a board member. And I'm going to ask you to focus more on non-executive board member roles.
Okay.
I, for example, have just stopped accepting non-executive board member positions because of the incredible amount of fiduciary responsibility that goes with it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you first question, how do you see the roles and responsibilities of a board director evolving in the current business climate?
So, boy, you have an uncanny knack of asking difficult questions.
You have so much knowledge.
So, you know, clearly, if I look at all the multiple fiascos that we have seen in the last decade, both globally and in India, you know, I think no question in my mind, there are boards have abdicated their fiduciary responsibilities. You know, People often say, you know, how can a board member be held responsible when management, you know, that whole debate about where does the buck stop? Does it stop with management? And the standard response is that, listen, as the board member, I can only know what management tells me. And therefore, I can't be held responsible for that. But based on my own experience over multiple boards, two or three takeaways for me is, one of the things that I've always believed that when you take on a non-executive board role, it is actually a 24/7, 365-day responsibility. It's not just about attending four-hour board meetings every quarter. You wear that hat throughout the year.
Right.
And that's why sometimes I wonder how people are able to take on these multiple board roles, because I, you know, to me, three is kind of the optimum number if I'm going to do justice to my role, because I am very anal about doing my homework, staying engaged, learning new ecosystems. And I'll talk about this in the context of Syndicate Bank as we move along. But clearly, I think there is no question that there has been a failure of boards living up to their responsibilities. So one of the things, for example, one of the pleasant surprises that I've started seeing, and maybe I've actually driven it on boards that I happen to be on, is the role of the NRC. So historically, it was the audit committee or the risk committee that had the seat at the table. But one of the big changes I've started seeing is that the role of the NRC has significantly evolved, because people have now started understanding, even though it was always said, you know, people are our biggest resource. But, you know, very rarely did that actually translate into tangible results. The other thing, and this is more so in the Indian ecosystem, where you have very concentrated ownership, is the role of an independent director. Right. As there's been this common mantra, how independent are independent directors in the Indian ecosystem?
Correct.
And this comes back to how directors are appointed, how succession plans are built, how boards are evaluated. None of this is done, in my opinion, in the Indian system adequately. So there's lots of moving parts. There's lots to do. And if India is going to become the able to attract international financial investment in India, as the government and the country is aspiring to, the first thing we're going to have to address is the quality of corporate governance in India, if you want to continue to attract world-class, build world-class organizations and attract foreign investment.
Well said, well said. And since you mentioned Syndicate Bank a few years back, and you were the former chairman of Syndicate Bank, let me ask you, what were some of your biggest challenges as the chairman of Syndicate Bank? And that's a non-executive role that you were in.
Right. So, you know, this was the first time historically in most public sector banks, they had a CMD as one role, chairman and managing director.
Yeah.
This was the first time where they actually split the role of chairman and managing director. And in my case, being a guy who came from an industrial manufacturing background and was a chemical engineer with no MBA, I used to often get asked this question, you know, what the hell, I mean, what is a guy like you doing, you know, chairing a financial services company? And, you know, my answer was that at its heart, at its core, business is not that complicated.
Absolutely.
You know, so these are all fungible skills that cut across any domain or any sector in that sense. So in the context of Syndicate, I think there were a few unique characteristics. One was, as I said, I had to learn a new language. You know, the acronyms and the buzzwords that were used in the financial services world were completely alien to me. So it was almost like learning a new language. Secondly, I really struggled with the fact that the way decisions were taken in a public sector board. So earlier I commented about the NRC, for example.
Yeah.
Now in a public sector bank, there is no NRC because all the decisions are made in Delhi. There is no succession planning concept. You have no way of introducing a rewards and recognition system that rewards a particular kind of behavior or incentivizes results. Those were some of the big challenges. And the other big challenge for me, particularly coming from a global MNC and having lived all over the world, was this very, very hierarchical culture. And I can go on with all kinds of examples. And there was no tolerance for dissent. So I'll give you one specific example that jumps out to me. When I got this letter of appointment from the Department of Financial Services, the cover letter said, "Dear Mr. Nanavati, we are pleased to appoint you as chairman, da 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 da." And then there was a second attachment to that letter, which was titled "Do's and Don'ts."
Okay.
Yeah. So I said, "Wow, you know, you are imposing restrictions on what I, as a chairman, can do." And in some ways, I later on learned this was a legacy of some of the frauds that had taken place in public sector banking. So they had introduced a specific set of don'ts. So one of the don'ts, for example, was that you will not interact as chairman of the board. You will not interact with any general manager. You will only communicate with the ED or the MD.
Wow.
And I said, this doesn't make sense. If I'm going to take my job sincerely, I'm going to have to understand the pulse of the organization. What's keeping our people awake at night? So I made it a point to set up an hourly meeting. We had like 20, 25 GMs with one-on-ones with each of them, though I'd been categorically said I shouldn't do that. So I remember somebody coming to me and saying, "Oh, wow, Mr. Nanavati, do you realize you could have the ED on your back for doing this?" And I said, "What's the worst you can do? You're going to fire me? I didn't apply for the job to start with." You know, so I had to be true to what I truly believed in, rather than just blindly following some arbitrary diktat that came. Well, so I can again go on with numerous such examples.
Yeah, but well said. So I have time for two more questions for you. My next question is that how does the approach of serving on large company boards like you have differ from a startup board, which also you're involved in?
So again, another interesting question. So I think the single answer is that the impact of mistakes, the scale of the impact of mistakes, a mistake in a large organization has hugely significant impact. Whereas a mistake in a startup environment is more of a learning experience. You learn from it and you move on. So that's one big issue, is that in a large corporation, the impact of a mistake or an error can have huge repercussions, can have a huge cascading effect. So again, when I joined a startup board, people say, "Hey, you know, Atum, what the hell do you know about startups? Yeah, now you spend all your life in a cozy ivory tower of an MNC. What do you know understand about the challenges that we face on a daily basis in terms of just even keeping the lights on from a cash flow perspective?" And I said, you know, even though you might think that I actually did start a company from scratch. When I started 3M as employee number one, we had no office, we had no revenues, we had no products, we had no customers. So I started a company from that ground up. I mean, I remember I used to do my job interviews for my first hires at the Bangalore Club Bar because we didn't have an office. You know, so I've actually you know, live to be frugal, you know, and that frugality of recognizing that, you know, hey, listen, and I often tell people, I said, you know, it's much easier to get money from a VC or a PE than is to get your head office to write you a check. You know, getting corporate to write you a check is more difficult to get than to get a VC or a PE to write you a check. So these were some of the things that I picked up.
Well said. And my last question to you, Ajay, and this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. What advice or what lessons would you give to individuals aspiring to become board members?
Wow. Again, this is a question I get asked quite often. Mm-hmm. I give a lot of talks at the Indian Institute of Corporate Affairs and Institute of Directors and at various Big Four, Big Five sessions. So I think the one big comment I would make, there are a number of points. The first one I would say is never assume, don't take anything for granted. Don't believe everything you hear.
Mm.
Question everything,
mm.
You know. Don't be willing to challenge every assumption.
Right.
Second one is learn to have the courage to voice dissent. I remember once I was having a chat with Vinita Bali and Rama Bijapurkar, good friends of ours, mine. And I said, you know, we on this very subject. And we said, you know, what do you think is the most important trait that you look for in a director or independent director?
Mm.
And without batting an eyelid, both of them said spine, backbone.
Correct.
And that is often in short supply. So I think learn to have the courage of your convictions. Don't hesitate to disagree. You know, there is often in India, we believe that silence is assent. And silence is not assent. Just because, you know, there is that standard 80-20 rule. 80% of airtime is taken by 20% of the board members, the old Pareto principle.
Right.
You know, and so the assumption is that because you haven't spoken up, you have agreed. And that is an extremely faulty premise. So those were the two or three things. And obviously, do your homework. Stay current on industry trends in your industry. As I said, when I took over Syndicate Bank, I knew nothing about financial services. So I spent hours and hours and hours and days and weeks learning how the financial services industry works.
Right.
You know. Be in a continuous learning mode. Don't assume you know it all. The biggest mistake you can make is, you know, saying, oh, I've been on the board of a large company, so by default, I know enough of this. The biggest problem is you don't know what you don't know, you know, and I think that's the big, big challenge.
Very well said. Ajay, on that note and your amazing three lessons, don't take everything for granted, question and challenge everything, have the courage to voice dissent, and I've written about this also. Very few people have the courage to say no. The third one you said was do your homework and stay current. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your own amazing journey. Thank you for speaking to me about so many different aspects of leadership. And I think a lot of our viewers and listeners will love your thoughts on leadership. Thank you also for giving a very, very different perspective on your avatar and as a board member. Thank you again for speaking to me and good luck.
Thank you for having me over and really appreciate. And I appreciate every. I mean, I went to some of your, I went to your website and I saw some of the other interviews that you've done. So clearly you're doing yeoman service to the nation by you know, communicating these things to the younger. You know, we keep talking about the demographic dividend, you know, and I think there couldn't be a better service than to teach the younger generation from the mistakes we've made and the scars on our backs, and learn from our mistakes and don't do the same mistakes we made.
Very well. Thank you again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.